to talk NFL. How cool for us. Mike, it's Dave, Katie, and Nate. Thanks for your time this morning on a busy week, I'm sure, for you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great to be with you, and look forward to doing it each and every week.
Let's start with circumcising a mosquito right at the top of your page, and we talked about this earlier. Jerry Jones is a wordsmith, but more importantly, they're keeping Tony Romo on the roster. They filled a spot with Tony Romo. Is there any legitimate chance, I know you're not a doctor, that they're thinking he comes back late in the year?
Well, yeah, I think they believe he comes back. The question is, if you put him on injured reserve, you have the option to bring him back to practice after 6 weeks and then two games 2 weeks after he returns to practice. But you tie your hands when it comes to a potential return sooner than that. Remember, when this injury first occurred and when they first realized there was a broken bone in his back, Jason Garrett, the head coach of the Cowboys, declined to rule Tony Romo out for the first week of the regular season. And I think there's a benefit to keeping teams guessing about who they're going to face. Now, I think the Giants can pretty much safely assume they're not going to see Tony Romo this weekend. But at some point on the schedule, if Tony Romo is on the active roster and he's returned to practice and we're hearing how he's recovering, at some point one of these teams the Cowboys play later in September and October may have to decide, do we spend time preparing for Romo or do we go all in preparing for Dak Prescott? You only have so many hours in the week. You only have so many practice reps with your scout team out there doing their thing. And you've got Washington week two, then the Bears, 49ers, Bengals, and Packers up until the bye on October 23. If you can make one of those teams think they may see Tony Romo and they do dilute their preparation for Prescott and Romo, you have an advantage. And maybe at some point you can spring Romo on a team that isn't ready for Romo. So that's why I think they're doing it. That 53rd spot on the roster really doesn't mean all that much. Seven guys don't dress every week anyway. So I think that's why they've done it. And now they have the flexibility, not just to bring him back whenever they want, but to make opponents think that he's potentially going to come back at any given time.
Mike, now that we're getting into the time of the season that actually matters, we're through the preseason, we're starting week one of the regular season, you look at the number of players that are not going to be available. It's around 30 players due to suspension, anywhere from a year to just a game. I'm curious, you know, the Tom Brady, we know that's going to be an impact for the Patriots. Josh Gordon, Le'Veon Bell. Is there anyone on that list that you think that their absence for their team for whatever period of time is going to play a major part other than Tom Brady?
Yeah. Well, look, not having Martavis Bryant on the Steelers, I think, is a major blow. This guy is one of the best young receivers in the NFL, and it's a testament to how good the Steelers offense is right now that the Steelers essentially shrugged when they lost Martavis Bryant for the year, because they have Antonio Brown, they have Marcus Wheaton, they have figured out the magic, the formula, the secret ingredients for finding competent receivers between rounds three and round six. They keep finding guys who can step in and play. Sammy Coates is the guy they expect to take up the slack that will result from Martavis Bryant being gone. So I think Bryant is going to be missed. The Steelers would be that much better with him. They still think they're going to be fine without him, but they would be so much better off if they had him out there benefiting from all the single coverage that he would get, because teams are going to be obsessed with stopping Antonio Brown.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, joining us on The Drive. Mike, I understand the Vikings are desperate, but how did the Eagles get a first-round pick for Sam Bradford?
Well, I think what happened was this. When Rick Spielman, the GM of the team, started calling around and seeing how much other teams were asking for backup-level quarterbacks, Josh McCown in Cleveland, whoever else was called, and Spielman didn't name names. He talked to Peter King about this, but he said there were teams, not just one, but some teams wanted a first-round pick and a core young player for whatever quarterback they would have been giving up. And I think at a certain point you say, well, if I'm going to give up that much for one of these journeymen who is available in trade for a reason, why not call the Eagles? And see, maybe there's a chance, and maybe there's an opportunity to get Sam Bradford. And they did it. They're giving up a lot to get him. But here's what I think the Vikings are thinking about the situation. Sean Hill could have simulated what Teddy Bridgewater did in 2014 and 2015. Bridgewater did not have huge numbers. 14 touchdown passes each year. 12 interceptions as a rookie. 9 interceptions last year. Sean Hill could do that. But what Sean Hill can't do is what Teddy Bridgewater would have done this year. And I think they believe that once they get Sam Bradford up to speed, he will do what Teddy Bridgewater would have done this year or something close to it. And the two-year contract that Bradford signed back in February gives the Vikings the flexibility to keep Bradford around for next year if there's any chance that Bridgewater is not going to be ready to go. So it's a one-year deal minimum. It's likely going to be a two-year thing because Bridgewater doesn't have a huge salary. You keep Bridgewater and Bradford next year and then make a decision in 2018. But the Vikings did what they had to do. And yes, they gave up a lot, but they were going to give up a lot to get anybody. And they decided we got a young team with a good defense, with one of the all-time greats at running back, and a new stadium, and Super Bowl aspirations, and we're going to go for it. Whether it works or not, you have to admire the moxie. But I look at it and I say, how many times have we ever seen a plug-and-play situation like this work out where a veteran quarterback shows up, or any veteran skill position player shows up and truly has a major impact right away? Bradford may be much better by next year than he's ever going to be this year.
Yeah, you know, Mike, I'm curious, on the flip side of this situation, Carson Wentz, of course, says he knows he's ready, but I think every player is going to say that. In your opinion, is he ready to run an NFL football team right now?
Well, ready to do it at a level that doesn't get him booed off the field? Maybe. And in Philadelphia, you'd better be ready at a level that won't get you booed off the field, because they will boo you off the field. The question is, what do you really expect from him? And I interviewed Howie Roseman earlier today. He's the Eagles GM. We'll play it tomorrow on my show, PFT Live. It's on NBC Sports Radio and NBCSN. And I asked him, look, I know every team wants to win the Super Bowl, but only one team's going to do it. What's a successful year for Carson Wentz? And they want to see him progress. They don't expect the guy to take him to the playoffs. They understand there's going to be growing pains. And I think the biggest challenge is convincing the guys in the locker room to buy in, because, you know, it's a year-by-year proposition in the NFL now. And they have consciously taken their foot off the gas by swapping out Bradford for Wentz. And they're building for the future now. So I think he's ready if the standard is good enough to go out there and play. Will he develop and grow and get better? That's going to be the real challenge.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, joining us on KHK, as he will weekly. We come local with the San Francisco 49ers. You have the Colin Kaepernick national anthem situation. You have Bruce Miller punching a 29-year-old man and his 70-year-old father and getting cut. By the way, Blaine Gabbert is now the starting quarterback for the 49ers. How much stress is on Chip Kelly going into his rookie year, and how much of a mess is this team, in your opinion?
Well, you know, Chip Kelly's been through a lot during his time in the NFL. We had that Riley Cooper situation in Philadelphia. I feel like the 49ers have handled the Kaepernick thing well. And what's strange to me about this, before Kaepernick sat down for the anthem and we noticed it 11 days ago, there was a strange vibe, and I thought there's no way this guy's playing for the 49ers this year. They're either going to cut him, they're going to trade him, they're going to put him in bubble wrap, because if he plays and he gets injured and he can't pass a physical by April 1, he's got $14.5 million fully guaranteed next year, a year after they're paying him an $11.9 million salary that they would probably prefer not to. So I didn't see this ending well, but he doesn't stand for the anthem, and the reaction by the team was positive, and he has real relationships with his teammates now. There was always this sense he was kind of aloof and on an island, and that's all changed. And he looked pretty good against the Chargers last Thursday night. He looked almost like the Kaepernick of old on that opening drive of the game. And when you listen to some of the things Chip Kelly has been saying, hard not to wonder whether or not he's going to be starting sooner rather than later. And I'm fascinated by how much this form of protest is going to spread. It's gone from one guy to three guys. How many more guys this weekend? How many more guys the following weekend? Because a lot of guys are supporting Colin Kaepernick. And one thing that I wrote recently at PFT, we could look back on this 5-10 years from now as the moment when the players in the NFL realized how much power they have. And they decide, we have it, and we're going to start using it, and we're going to find creative ways to use it. But the least creative way to use it is just support Colin Kaepernick by not standing during the anthem. And again, I'm not saying that it's the right thing to do, but it's your constitutional right to do it. And so far, the overall reaction, it was really negative at first, but I feel like more people than not are saying, hey, if he chooses to do that to bring light to the issues he's concerned about, he's got every right to do it.
The reaction from that when it first happened was so severe, and you can understand why people were having that reaction. But as this message has kind of developed and Colin Kaepernick has talked to more people, we're seeing a little bit of a softening of how people are viewing this. But you can also see it with the way that fans are supporting him by buying his jerseys. I mean, it's just, do you think that, you know, you see the jersey sales skyrocketing right now, Mike. Do you think that we're going to actually see fans also potentially taking a knee during the anthem to support him?
I think that's entirely possible. And anytime you have a polarizing issue, you're going to have people on one side of it who feel very, very strongly about it. And you're going to have people on the other side. And that's so many of the issues in America today. It's red state, blue state. I'm right, you're wrong, and I'm not even going to listen to your side of it. And I hope we can get to a point as a people where we at least listen to what other people say. We at least have an open mind instead of so stubbornly adhering to our position, whatever it is, wherever you stand on this. There's always middle ground, and there's always a way to better understand what's going on. And it doesn't surprise me that people are buying his jersey, because people who believe in the things that Kaepernick strongly believes in, the point that resonated for me last week, and this isn't an anti-cop thing. If I was a cop, I'd be concerned about this. What is the bar for becoming a licensed police officer in California? How does it compare to other things like cosmetologist? I did the research. 888 hours, a six-month training program at a police academy, 1,600 hours to be eligible to sit for the cosmetology exam. So he does make a good point. And what's wrong with having a conversation about whether or not the people on the front lines of American law enforcement have the proper training before they're making life and death decisions that relate to them and they relate to the people they're interacting with? Why should we should, that's definitely, of all the conversations we have as a people, that should be one of the top conversations we have, because anyone and everyone at some point in their life is going to interact with law enforcement.
Mike, you got a ton of information you throw out there. You'll be joining us every week, but let everybody know, in addition to Pro Football Talk, where's the best place for people to pick you up?
Well, we're always open at ProFootballTalk.com every day, regardless of what day of the year. We'll have plenty of stuff updated there with our finger on the pulse of the NFL. PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. It's on 6 to 9 a.m. local time, Pacific time, and 3 to 6 a.m. We play it back-to-back, so it's in drive time in East Coast and West Coast. And the last 2 hours, now this is really early out in your neck of the woods, but I guess it would be 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. is on NBCSN. Simulcast. So that's where we are every day. And obviously Football Night in America at 4 o'clock Pacific time every Sunday, and post game coverage after the game that's on NBC. And it all gets started Thursday night. We're heading to Denver momentarily for the Panthers Broncos game.
One of the busiest dudes in sports, Mike Floria, finding time to join us each week. Mike, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you after opening weekend.
Thanks. Have a great week.
Thanks,
all right,
Mike.
You too. That is Mike Floria joining us.